Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. I'm super excited for this one, mostly because I have a full cup of coffee. I'm going to take a sip right now. This is your sign that if you have not had a good coffee today and you want one, go and make one. Unless it's like 10 p.m. at night, then probably better not do that. But it's definitely been a two coffee kind of day, and it's definitely been a week. It's been a hard one, and I've felt stuck, I've felt frustrated, I've felt like I wanted to give up on a few things that I'm doing and projects that I'm working on. And there's some weeks and some days where I just want to give up entirely. And it's never a serious thought, like it's never a serious consideration, but it's at that point where I start to go, this feels far too difficult. And I don't see my way out. I feel like I'm on a treadmill. And so I want to talk about that because I know I'm not alone in feeling those things. I want to talk about that, how it relates to diet, how it relates to doing difficult things. So this podcast episode is going to be for anyone who feels frustrated, hopeless, stuck, anxious, or like things are just too difficult. Let's dive into it. The reason that this topic is so important is that we will experience difficulties and hardships and struggles along any kind of meaningful journey. I think that's really important to understand and embrace, first of all, because if we have this expectation that we're going to have smooth sailing, or that once things click into place, it's all going to be rainbows and unicorns, then we're going to feel demoralized when it doesn't feel that way. So expect that you are going to feel terrible a lot of the time throughout the journey. And it's not an indication that something is wrong. It's not even an indication of any kind of reality. It's just the way that we feel about it. I always try to remind myself that my feelings are not a good indicator of truth. And I can be making great progress and feel absolutely terrible about it. In fact, most of the time when I'm making the most progress in my life is when I feel worse about it, because it's highlighting my inadequacies. It's a period of growth and stretching. It feels super uncomfortable because I'm doing things that I'm not equipped to do, or that I'm learning them for the first time. So progress in and of itself, like by definition, there's going to be a lot of uncomfortable feelings around that. On the same vein, you can have a terrible plan, or you can be stuck in the planning stage and feel really, really good about what you're doing and be absolutely tanking your life. Like you can feel good and it not be good. You can feel bad and it not be bad. So we need to have really accurate data. We need to understand, why am I feeling the way that I am? Is it actually an indication that something's wrong? How do I make decisions that are in line with who I want to be, regardless of what my feelings say? We have to get clear on what the facts actually say so that we can make informed decisions and keep going even when the going gets tough. It's like the Lion King quote, the tough get going. What is it? Well, I think it's Timon and Pumbaa. They say, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, which is basically run away and hide. We don't want to do that because we're never going to get to our goal if that's our default. There's four main emotions that come up around things feeling difficult and like you want to quit. The first one is hopelessness. The second one is anxiety. The third one is frustration. And the fourth one is when things feel too hard. So when I think about these four emotions, we want to identify which one is the reason that we're feeling the way that we are. We're going to have a lot of thoughts when we want to quit and when things are feeling really difficult. So we want to get into, well, why am I feeling that way? And whether you feel hopeless or anxious is an indication of two very different things happening in order to make you feel that way. And I want you to think about this phrase as we go through the podcast. Do I need to make a plan, change the plan, or stick to the plan? Because all of these feelings come around these three elements of where we're at in our journey. So there's this quote that I love, and it comes from someone I've quoted a lot. His name is Alex Hormozi. He's an amazing businessman. I love the ethos that he has, which is very much around doing difficult things and not letting your feelings and your emotions stagnate you from where you want to be. And he came up with this great thing, and it's really just that sadness comes from lack of options, which is why it feels like hopelessness. And anxiety comes from many options but lack of priorities, which is why it feels like paralysis. I can never say this. Every time on the podcast I say paralysis, but it's paralysis. And that's looking everywhere else but not moving anywhere. So you solve sadness with knowledge and you solve anxiety with decision. So we're going to go into what those means, and then I've added frustration and things feeling too hard because I think they're big parts of the equation as well. So let's get into hopelessness first. Hopelessness is this idea that we have a lack of options. So this is when we're feeling like, I don't know what to do next. And honestly, this is a lot of how I was feeling this week, that I couldn't see a way out of some of the situations that were happening in my life. The times where I felt the most hopeless is where I don't see any kind of solution. I remember very distinctly when Nick was diagnosed with MS, and we just didn't really know what that meant at the time, and I knew it was going to have a huge impact on our life. It was very scary. It felt like there was a lot of anxiousness there because we didn't really know what our next steps were. And then the more that we started to learn about it, we realized, okay, this is something that is progressive. There's not really any kind of timeline. It can be really bad for some people. Other people can manage it okay. We started to look into options with diet, decided that, hey, it makes sense for Nick to go on a plant-based diet, which he wasn't at the moment, specifically a low-fat diet. And so there wasn't really, at that point, any hopelessness because we didn't know enough about the situation. When I found out I was pregnant, which was only about a month later, I couldn't see any way out because all my capacity felt like it was going towards just keeping okay enough to fight and look for some kind of option for Nick's MS. Having that added thing where I didn't want to be pregnant and then I found out that I was, I didn't see that there was anything that I could do at that point where my life would feel meaningful or worthwhile because there were two things that felt too difficult and I didn't see how I was going to cope. So I didn't have any options. That is the most hopeless that I have felt in my life, and it's a horrible feeling. Like if you've ever felt that, like I feel for you. That is not a fun place to be. One thing I'll say about this, though, is that we always have options. We always have the ability to respond in a way that aligns with who we want to be. And this is something that I learned many years later that really helped me to get out of this victim mindset that I would default into. And there was a lot of moving parts to how I got out of that. But I remember very distinctly when I first read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and Stephen Covey talks about being proactive. And proactivity is your ability to respond. And it's your response ability. And that he talks about there being a gap between response and stimuli. So whatever is happening to you, be it the weather, be it emotions, be it someone is dragging you outside of your home, which has happened to many, many people. Whether it be something terrible happening to you in terms of being diagnosed with something, whether it being someone yelling at you, there is always a gap between any kind of stimuli and what you choose to do. And that ultimately, that's where your freedom comes from. And this idea actually comes from a man called Viktor Frankl, who was a prisoner in Auschwitz. So he was a concentration camp prisoner and also a psychologist, and he realized that no one can take this away from you. No matter what is happening, no matter the terrible situations that you go through, no matter how hopeless life may feel, you always have the ability to respond in a certain way. And what he saw in that experience was that some people responded like animals, and they almost became animals because they didn't take ownership of responding in a way that was different to the stimuli that was coming in. They were reactive to it instead of proactive. But then there was a few individuals who, in spite of all odds, in spite of all hardships and cruelty, became beacons of hope in that environment, and that they had the choice to do that. So my thoughts on this are that, of course, there is always hope, but our ability to respond is really where that comes from. What I want to get into with this, though, is if you are feeling a sense of hopelessness, it is not because the situation itself is hopeless, it's because we think that we don't have options. So the way that we solve for that is that we get more knowledge of what those options may be. So a lot of the time, this is going to be you doing some research. It's going to be brainstorming all paths. When I was feeling hopeless this week, or just the sense of like, I don't know what to do next, I realized, heck, actually, there's so many things that I could do. I have so many options. If I were to write down and I was just to get out volume, because this is what we want to do in a brainstorming phase. This has been really helpful advice for me, and take it if you think it's going to be helpful for you as well. If you are trying to find a solution to a problem, you want volume. You want to get out as many options, as stupid or as divergent, as weird as they may be. Get them out on paper and then start to sift through them, because this is going to teach you, first and foremost, that there are many, many ways to solve one problem. There is not just one single answer to it. So you're going to go from feeling hopeless to feeling like, wow, like I have so many avenues. Now I just got to figure out which one is the best one to pick. So get out that volume. You're not trying at this stage to figure out what is right. If you have someone that you can get guidance from, then get that guidance. Go to someone who knows more than you. Go to that person who has done it before. I think this is the best thing that you can do if you are feeling hopeless. Get the cheat code from the person who's been where you are and has now seen the results that you want to see. Get curious as well. A lot of the time we feel hopeless because we've tried a lot of different things, or we've tried the same thing many, many times and it hasn't worked. And then we're not open-minded for different ways to solve that. We're hopeless because we think, well, that hasn't worked for me in the past. How's it going to work for me again? Therefore, I don't have options. You do have options. You're just thinking about this in a very limited manner because you haven't allowed yourself to be open-minded and curious. So if you want to solve for hopelessness, you have to get more knowledge and options. And then once you do, is where we move on to anxiety. So if you're feeling a sense of anxiety, it's because you have a lot of options. And normally this leads to indecision. So anxiety is there when we feel like I don't know what to pick. I have some ideas. Some are good, some are bad, some are going to cost me money, some are going to cost me time, some are going to require other people to get involved. How do I sift through every single thing? So hopelessness is no options. Solve it by getting more options, getting guidance, getting some knowledge. Anxiety, if you're feeling that right now, is you probably just don't have a plan. So if you remember what I said in the beginning, do I need a plan? Do I need to change the plan, or do I need to stick to the plan? So this is where those things come in. So anxiety is you really don't have a plan yet, but you've got a lot of things going on that could potentially go into a plan. This is a really difficult place to be in because we haven't really made a decision yet about what moving forward looks like. And I want to say something that's really, really important, especially if you're someone who struggles with indecision. Any decision is better than no decision. The wrong decision is better than the best decision that you didn't make. Let me say that again, because I see people struggle with this every single day. You would be better to make the worst decision than to stay stuck and make no decision. Because when you make a bad decision, quote unquote, then you can learn from that and you can have a process of elimination where you go, okay, scratch that off the list. That one didn't work. If you continue on and you do not make a decision, you never get to that point. So I'm not scared of making wrong decisions. I'm much, much more scared of indecision. I can recover from bad decisions. And I don't see things as bad decisions either. This is another mindset reframe that's super helpful for me, is that I look at decision making as I will do the best I can with the information I have. And if I need more information to make a decision, I will go and find that. But then once I've made a decision, if it turns out that that wasn't good, I'm not going to say that that decision was a mistake. I'm not going to say that that was a bad decision. I'm just going to say that was the best decision that I made at the time with the information I had. And so it allows me more grace for myself about making decisions, because it's not going to indicate that I'm a failure or that I've done something bad if I end up choosing, quote unquote, the wrong thing. I was talking to my sister the other day, and she is a 6 on the Enneagram, and she was talking about how she has this very, very strong idea of wanting to make the right decision. And she actually thought, well, maybe I'm a different one. If you're into the Enneagram, then you're going to love this. If you're not, then skip over it. But essentially, she was thinking, hey, I am so bottlenecked and I find myself so indecisive because I do not want to make the wrong decision. And that's a tendency of a lot of people, that they get stuck because they don't want to make the wrong decision. And I just really don't believe that for most things there is a right or wrong. I just think there's a decision. And I will literally say that as a mantra to myself. A decision. It's a decision. It's not a wrong decision. It's not a right decision. There are decisions that have very negative consequences. So you need to be thinking about all those different things. And so that's how really we want to be thinking about decision making. Decision making is positive. Decision making is necessary. The person who makes more decisions is able to get ahead more because they have more opportunities to learn. If you are someone who is indecisive, then it is far more important that you get used to making decisions than it is that you make the right ones, because you will be stuck if you do not make decisions. So how do you make a good decision in this instance? I like to think about it in terms of best case, worst case, proven method, and has this worked for other people. So the best case scenario is the optimist. And I tend to think this way because if I wasn't optimistic, I would not have a podcast, I would not have a business, I would not have a coaching program, I would not have social media. I tend to see the world as I can break down any door and I will make it work. So I like to think about this way because it is a skill set that we have. And there's this razor that I love, and it says, optimists see open doors, and if doors are closed, they will knock them down. It is overall better to see the possibilities in something than it is to just see the worst case scenario. My husband and I actually have this filter that we use for making decisions, which is our own little razor that has been incredibly powerful in our lives, and that is that we don't make decisions based on fear. So we make decisions intentionally based on opportunities, and we factor in the costs, we factor in what the negative things could be. But if fear is a factor in terms of why we wouldn't do something, then we're very, very cautious to use that as an excuse not to. We want to actually eliminate that as an excuse and say, well, hey, what does the data say? Because fear is just fear. Fear is not something that is inherently meaningful in terms of this means that this is a bad decision. It's just fear. You have to actually get to the root cause of that and address it. This is actually the same kind of thing I tell my kids when they try to use their sister as a reason for doing or not doing something. So they'll come in and say, hey, Riley had a marshmallow. Can I have a marshmallow too? And I say to them, I want you to ask me that question without using that other person as a reason, because they're not a reason. And so quite often they'll say, well, mom, can I have a marshmallow? I'm like, sure. Yeah, you can have a marshmallow. But don't use her as a reason, because what some random neighbor did is not a reason for why you would do something. So why would it be a reason for your sister? The life is not fair. I'm trying to teach my kids essentially that life is not fair. And so that someone else getting or not getting something is never a reason that it should change anything for them, because they're an individual. So I like to look at what is the best case scenario. If this went according to plan, is this going to get me to where I want to be? Okay, that's a factor in it. If the decision that you're wanting to make is easy and it is something that doesn't require a ton of effort, but the results that you're going to get are just not really stellar, then I'd be looking at, well, is that actually worth any kind of effort? Like, if you're not going to get a good ROI, essentially that's what best case is. Do you get a good return on investment for that decision? And then we want to look at, well, what about the worst case? Worst case scenario, what would we do? We would do this. This is what would happen. Worst case scenario, a lot of the time for people, is I lose money. Worst case scenario is I try something and it doesn't work and I feel like a failure. Worst case scenario, I fall. Like, if you're doing something to do with sports, I've gotten into skateboarding over the last year or so. Actually, it's way longer than that, but I bought a trick board. And so now I'm doing things like dropping in and trying to do a kick turn and trying very, very slowly to learn to ollie in my 30s, which for some people probably makes no sense, but it's fun and it gets me out the door. But worst case scenario for a lot of those things is that I hurt myself. Best case scenario, if I send it and I succeed, I feel flippin' amazing. So when I think about the worst case compared to the best case, it is better for me to send it and have a little bit of pain to achieve that outcome that I want. Like, worst case scenario of not doing it is I never get there and I feel continually worse and worse and worse because I haven't conquered my fear. I also have that fear raiser in there. So I'm like, well, you know what? You feel scared. That's just not a good enough reason to do it. So this is really helpful. But if you think about this from another perspective, if you had worst case that was going to be a life or death situation, like if you had a condition where your bones would break really easily, standing on top of the coping and dropping in to a mini ramp is probably not the best decision for you to make. There's probably better things, because best case, you land it. Worst case, maybe you die. So don't do that. So think about it in terms of those things. Is the best case worth the worst case scenario? And a lot of the times when you think about it this way, it becomes much easier. The next one that I really like is there a proven method of success? And I would say that this is actually the most important things when it comes to trying to achieve an outcome that is replicable. So there's a big difference between making a decision of moving to another country and or staying in your hometown. It's so subjective. It's so dependent on what your goals are, what you value in your life, whether you've got family close, what the opportunities are. That is a really a best case, worst case kind of decision. But if you're trying to lose weight, if you are trying to build muscle, there are proven methods that do that. There are proven ways, and there may be many. This is where it becomes difficult. But there's going to be many, many things that have worked. So what you need to look at is, well, what is the thing that has been shown to work the best? Or what is the thing that has been shown in the most cases to work for the most people? So you're looking for some kind of proof that the methodology actually works. And then this is the fourth part in this, is if it's worked for other people and you can replicate their inputs, then what is the reason that wouldn't work for you? If those inputs are directly related to outputs. If I was to eat vegetables every day, if I was to listen to Chelsea and not give in to a binge every time I had a failure, and instead I said to myself, fail fast, pick yourself up, don't miss 2 days. And that's been working for other people. And I continued to do that. And I did some steps every day. And I ate potatoes because that's what's worked for many, many other people. If I was to do that, is there any reason that I wouldn't see the success that I'm looking for? And if there's not, then why wouldn't you do that? Like, that's a really, really easy way to make decisions. Some really important notes on this is that when you're looking at what decision to make, do not do something that you've tried before that didn't work. You may do a similar thing in a different manner, but do not do the same thing and let it be something that relies on you needing more willpower. There's a huge difference in having a similar strategy that eliminates the need for willpower or sets you up for success than it is on doing the same thing and just thinking, well, I'm more motivated this time, so I'm going to do it. It worked that time. An example of this is if you've lost weight a certain way, let's say that you counted calories in the past, and you counted calories and you lost weight, and you're thinking about, well, what do I do now? What the heck do I do? Do I count calories? Do I go keto? Do I eat a plant-based diet? Do I join Chelsea's program? Do I join someone else's program? Do I get a personal trainer? Do I, whatever the heck, do I eat grass off the lawn? If you've tried calorie counting and you lost weight, but then you gained it back because that didn't feel sustainable to you, then don't do that again. It didn't work. It didn't matter. It doesn't matter if it worked in the moment. That's so irrelevant. You have to have things that have continued results. You have to have something that doesn't rely on willpower. I mean, it's an entirely different story if you say, hey, what would happen if I were to hire a coach? Or you would ask yourself, well, hey, what was the reason that this didn't work? Okay, it was because it required too much willpower, which is the other filter that you need to set. Do not do something that relies on too much willpower. Well, if that's the reason that I couldn't stick to it, do I need accountability? Could I do something that had accountability? Could I make this more satisfying so it was easier to do it? Could I do this with a buddy that was also committed? Is there some other manner that this would work? In terms of the calorie counting analogy, I would say the biggest reason that something like that doesn't work is that it just takes too much time. So you can look at that and you can analyze it and you can say, hey, well, why don't I not do something that hasn't worked before, aka something that takes too much time? I need to try something that takes less time. Really look and analyze the things that you've done before and say, well, the reason that this didn't work wasn't necessarily that the system itself was broken. It was that it had some kind of constraint that didn't work for me and my situation. Personally, nothing is going to work for me that takes too much time. In terms of my diet, if I have to meal prep every day for an hour, if I have to devote 5 hours of time on a Sunday, if I have to track and calorie count and weigh and measure everything, that does not work for me because I do not want to devote time, and I find myself that I just won't. I will not do that. And honestly, most people are the same. Eating similar foods, eating foods where I always have them in my fridge, eating things that I find enjoyable, having that flexibility, not having to weigh and measure things, not having to go hungry, that doesn't rely on willpower, and it works. And it's been proven to work for many different people. So that is a great option when you're thinking about that. And then on this as well, fail fast. Make a decision. You're going to know quite quickly where you've gone wrong if you make a wrong decision, or like I said, that you make a decision with the data that you have at the time. I think where a lot of people get stuck is they do not know how to analyze failure well, so they constantly try and do the same things. The biggest filter that you can use to analyze failure is, what are the things outside of my willpower that will either hold me back or force me into the behaviors? Hold me back from the negative behaviors I'm trying to cut, or force me into the positive behaviors that I'm trying to create. And if you can look at that and you can find those patterns, then you can make incrementally better decisions and you can progress very, very fast if you do this. I was talking to Ginger on the podcast. You would have just heard the podcast episode that we did, I think last week or the week before. And she was talking about how since she joined Lean with Plants, this has totally changed for her. Because now when she feels like she fails, she can actually look back and say, well, what was the reason for that? There was something broken in my system. There is always a systems issue when something breaks. It is never a willpower issue. It's a fallacy that some people just have more dedication and willpower. James Clear in his book Atomic Habits says, disciplined people just have a more disciplined environment. So if you find yourself reaching for sweets at night when you're craving them, why do you have them in your house? You have an environment that is set up for you to fail. If you find yourself reaching for the phone and then ordering pizza on a night when it's 9 p.m. and you haven't had anything to eat and you skipped breakfast, then you're failing not because you don't have enough willpower, but because you went hungry all day and you skipped a meal. Therefore, you're hungry and you're even crazier and have more cravings at night. Like, solve for yourself being lazy, time poor, and wanting the path of least resistance. If you solve for those things, then you will make better decisions. And if you need more data, then go back to phase one. Get curious again. Get curious about, well, why am I making decisions that don't work? Or why am I feeling anxious and I have all these options? Do I just need to make some kind of decision? Do I just need to stick to some kind of plan? Do I just need to go, I'm in or I'm out? And then once you've found that plan, like, stick to it, which we're going to talk about in a second. And one thing that I want to say before we move on to this is, it's really important to not get stuck in the planning stage, because once you start to create a plan or once you start to hone in on what you might do, you will find instant relief. And I found this week because I used the systems that I'm talking about today and I started to create options. And I got on some calls with people. I talked to some coaches that I have. I got some guidance. And now, instead of feeling hopeless because I've got no options, because I got curious, I've got a myriad of things that I could try. And it feels a lot better because now I'm starting to formulate a bit of a timeline and I'm going, well, you know what? I'm going to try this for a certain amount of days or a couple of weeks. And then if that doesn't work, I'm going to go on to this, or I'm going to talk to this person. I'm going to get their advice. And then I'm going to make a decision based on what they say here, or I'm going to look at these figures and figure out this over here. And it feels really good, but a lot of people get stuck here because planning feels like execution. Planning gives our brains a similar kind of chemical release to actually doing the thing. So we feel this false sense of making progress when we're not yet. It's really important that once you create a plan, not the right plan, a plan, that you execute it with speed and violence, that you hit that hard. You do not get stuck planning. It feels good and then it will feel terrible again because you realize that you are stuck there and you are indecisive. I cannot stress this enough. Become someone who makes more decisions. Become someone who makes a decision, not a right decision, not a wrong decision, just a decision. And truly, the faster that you can make decisions, the faster that you will see results. The less anxiousness that you will have about making quote unquote bad decisions, because the more you will teach yourself, you are able to recover. You cannot recover from something that you have not tried because you're stuck there, you're in limbo. You can recover from almost anything else, and you'll teach yourself that you're able to do that. So if you're anxious, then make a decision. All right, so moving on to frustration. So frustration, I hear this word so often. People come and they say, I'm frustrated, I'm doing all these things right, I'm not seeing results, I'm menopausal, and it's so much harder to lose weight, and it's frustrating. And frustration, the root of it, is that the expectation of what should happen is different from the reality that you're seeing. And normally that happens because you're not seeing as much progress as you thought you would at that point. And so quite often the thought process around frustration is, I should be here by now. I should be losing this much weight by this day. I should have been able to figure it out. I should have been able to have the goal that I wanted to for now. Goodness knows I've been trying for the last 10 years. So we do this thing where we should on ourselves. And I've talked about this in another podcast as well. I think this is one of the most, I was going to use the word pernicious. And then I'm like, is that actually, that's a word? So I just looked it up. Pernicious means having a harmful effect, especially in a gradual or subtle way. The pernicious effects of air pollution. Yeah, it's exactly the word I want to use. So kudos to me. And maybe you've just learned a new word. So I truly believe that this shooting on ourselves is one of the most pernicious things that will halt us in our journey, because our expectation is different to reality, and then we start to think, well, you know what, I should just give up, this is too hard, this is frustrating. We do not want to do things that are frustrating. We want to do things that are slightly above our capabilities, because and then feel like we're making progress on them. When we feel like we're making an adequate amount of progress, we can do the most difficult things. We can keep going. If you do something difficult and you get a good result for it, you're rewarded by that experience. We do difficult things every day. But when we think that the outcome that we're getting is or should be different to what we actually have, that's when we start to go, this is not worth doing anymore. My biggest question is this, is are your expectations accurate? This is coming back to being data-driven rather than emotionally driven. Coming back to this idea, do I need to make a plan? Do I need to change the plan? Or do I need to stick to the plan? Because if you should be somewhere else by now, as in you have done all the action steps, you have dotted the T's and crossed the I's, you have, that's the wrong way around, you have done absolutely everything. You have gone the extra mile. You have done this on a long enough timeline. Then, yeah, change the plan. Maybe the plan is not good enough. But most of the time, a mediocre plan will get you where you need to be if you keep executing it. And most of the time, our expectations of how much effort it is actually going to require to succeed, or how much time it is going to require to succeed, are not lined up with reality. So the biggest thing that we need to ask ourselves, if we're feeling a sense of frustration, is that accurate? Is my timeline accurate? Go back to getting data. What is the shortest amount of time that if you were to do something, it would be reasonable for you to get the results that you want? Okay, now don't think about the shortest time. Think about, what about the longest time? Or what about at least double it? Think about, well, what about all the extra circumstances? Based on everything that is happening, would it be reasonable at this time that I would see the results that I want to see? Am I actually being honest with myself that the changes that I want to see are going to happen with the inputs that I've put in? Because a lot of the time we feel frustrated because we don't have results that we haven't put the work in for yet, or we haven't put the time in for. And we think that because it feels hard, and because we feel like we've been doing it for a long time, we should magically, should again, have the results that we want to have. But is that actually what it takes? If you think about losing weight, and someone comes to me and they say, hey, you know what, I've been trying this for a year, and I've been struggling, well, maybe longer, maybe decades. I've been trying this for decades. I've been so good. I've been white knuckling it. I've been eating vegetables every day. And then we actually look at the data and we go, actually, you're having a blowout every weekend. You're having alcohol most nights. You're not eating a pound of veggies. In fact, you're only eating half a pound, and sporadically at best. You've got no kind of movement in your life. You don't have a consistent plan for getting out there and actually moving in some way. You tend to give up for different times throughout the year and then get back on track. You go hungry and then you binge. You're stuck in these kind of cycles. It feels really difficult, but really your results that you have today are totally accurate to the inputs that you've put in. And here's the thing that is going to trigger a lot of people. I'm going to say anyway, who you are today, the results that you have right now, are a direct result of the inputs that you either have or haven't put in. There's no should. You shouldn't have a different outcome. You have the outcome that is expected based on what you've put in and done. Because you're working with what you have. You're not working with some magical unicorn where it's like, this is the golden standard and everyone is the same and life is fair and we have all the same bodies, the same age, the same opportunities. We have everything the same. And so if you do X, Y, Z and you check off every single box, you're going to get exactly the same result as the influencer online. Like, we know logically that's not true. We know that one person might have to put in 10 decibels of effort. Making this up, I don't even know what that means, but some kind of level of effort. They're going to put a 10 in terms of effort. Someone else is going to have to put a 200 to receive the same kind of result. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because all our situations are different. And most of the time, here's the encouraging thing, I think. Most of the time, we're not actually putting in nearly as much effort as we actually think we are. It just feels difficult because we're not used to being uncomfortable. And so I really want you to be honest with yourself. And this is where having accurate data comes in. Because if you're being honest with yourself that you're doing all the things that would be reasonable for you to get that result, or even you're doing all the things that it would be unreasonable that you wouldn't have some kind of result. Let's even change that. So not that it would be reasonable, that would be just totally unreasonable. So that you outwork and that you out-input all the things that could possibly hold you back. You out-input your age, you out-input your circumstances, you out-input your cravings, you out-input all the different things. And you do so much above and beyond that it would be so unreasonable that you wouldn't have the results. If you haven't done that, or you have done that, and you're still not seeing what you want to see, change the plan. The plan is not working. But most of the time, our timeline is just not accurate. Our timeline is short because we're impatient. And as a society, going there, we're just conditioned to think that things are fast. We have pills to solve our problems. We have on-demand binging TV where we used to have to wait weeks for that, the same thing to come out. Right now you can binge watch series. We couldn't even imagine having to wait. We go on Spotify if we want to listen to a song. We don't have to wait for it to come on the radio. If we want to get somewhere that's 2 hours away, we hop on a plane or we drive in a car. We don't have to do a horse and carriage ride there, let alone walk. So we expect things to be faster than most of the time they are. And this is very true when it comes to weight loss, because weight loss is only going to be as fast as it can be, which is the most cliche kind of thing to say. But even in the absolute best case scenario, everything done quote unquote right, robotic responses, which we cannot plan for, you're still really realistically only going to be losing maybe 3-4 pounds a week. Like, that's going to be fast weight loss for most people. And most people are never going to sustain that because we're not robots and because we get hungry. And we're also trying to break patterns, if not decades of actions, at least years. So we've got to have a realistic kind of timeline of how long things should take and be honest with ourselves. And this helped me a lot this week because I was thinking about the things that I was struggling with. And I thought, you know what, Charles, you want this to have been done. You want it to be finished by now. You're feeling frustrated that it's not. You didn't take the action and make the decision that you needed to 6 months ago. So you waited. You were indecisive about something you knew wasn't working. You knew that you needed to make a change and you didn't want to change because it was painful to do so. It was scary. You didn't do that. So now, 6 months on from that, you're behind where, quote unquote, you should be because of a decision that you made. Like, this is accurate. So now we're kind of trying to play catch up. And so in your mind, you're going, well, I've been struggling with this for 6 months. It should be fixed by now. But really, you've only started to take decisive action in the last couple of weeks, or even in the last month. And even then, there are decisions that have been unmade, or there's indecision still going on. So you're going on a similar kind of trajectory with some of these things. So it's unreasonable that you really would have had the changes that you expect by now. And even if from this point, you were to start making the kind of just changes that were not fear-based, that were best case scenario based, that were evidence-based, that were proven, even if you were to do that, you're still going to really expect that it's going to be a couple of months from now to see the benefit of those changes, providing that you do everything textbook. And so when I look at it like that, it helps me to go, you know what, this kind of frustration that I feel is really unreasonable. I can feel like it's hard right now in the moment, but I don't really have a right to be frustrated because I shouldn't expect anything different. I'm shooting on myself, but it's unreasonable to expect anything different. So if you don't have confidence in your plan, if you're anxious, make a decision, commit, and then if it's not working, go back to the plan. But please give yourself a long enough timeline. Look at your expectations. Are they actually accurate? And if the timeline is not accurate, you must stick it out. Most of the time, we need to lengthen our timelines. And so to solve this feeling of frustration, in the short term, we can give ourselves a win. So we can acknowledge and we can look and see, hey, even though I'm not where I want to be right now, there are actions that I can do that are leading me towards that goal. And we want to really, really celebrate them. And I love to give myself a win in these situations because it helps to propel me forward and give me that motivation to keep going. So when I'm having a really frustrating week, like I did this week, or feeling sad and hopeless and depressed and all these other things, I'm asking myself, well, what kind of thing could I do that I'm going to feel good about, even if it's small? Okay, if I went for a run, is that going to give me a win? Yes. If I get a member interview on the podcast, it doesn't solve all my problems, but is it going to give me a win? Yes. If I have like a good conversation with someone and I ask good questions, if I have a live in our Lean to Plants community and I put 100% into that and people really resonate with that, like, can I give myself that win? Yes. It doesn't solve everything, but it allows me to keep going. And then you want to acknowledge that past progress as well. A lot of the time we feel frustrated because we're just not looking at the progress we've actually made. And this is really common when we're people who tend to beat ourselves up. We've been taught our whole lives to focus on outcomes rather than inputs, that we are overachievers. And so we don't want to look at the progress we've made because it's not good enough. And this is a surefire way to stay stuck in your old patterns of behavior and all and out thinking. We must acknowledge the past progress we've made. Oftentimes, one of the best things you can do if you're feeling frustrated is to write down the progress that you have made. Write down what wins you have made. Write down how you have seen changes in yourself. Because that's going to motivate you to keep going. It's going to remove some of that frustration because you can see, hey, my timeline might not be accurate, but I'm going to stick to the plan. And I'm going to acknowledge that I am moving along that timeline. It's just slower than I would like it to be. And that's okay. And then lastly, we want to change our definition of success to leading actions, not outcomes. Because our outcome and our frustration is because we're not where we want to be. So if we can change that to success being just this far off in the future thing, this long distance finish line that we will only feel the sense of accomplishment when we get there, is very demoralizing because nothing along the way is going to be satisfying. And we're most likely going to give up because we don't have any motivation to keep going, because motivation comes from feeling like you're making progress. That's where it comes from. So if we can instead, we can look and see, okay, so if I do this, if these are the actions that are going to lead me to success, then every single time I do them, I'm going to celebrate that and I'm going to say that that is a win. And how this works, how this plays out for me, man, so many ways, but one that comes to mind is skateboarding, because I am nowhere where I want to be. And I want to tell you a very vulnerable thing. I bought the mini ramp for myself to get better at skateboarding, to have a positive movement outlet that wasn't running or something else, to have fun, to have a hobby, to make me want to get out in the sun, all these things. I have not, I have now actually, I did yesterday because I started to flip this around, but for a few days, I didn't want to hop on that ramp because I'm not where I want to be skill set wise. And I knew that if I hopped on that ramp, I would feel like it was another thing that I was failing in. Like, dead serious, dead honest with you. And I didn't want to feel that. And the reason that I was feeling like a failure in that is that I was focusing on outcomes, because I can't do all the tricks that I want to do. I haven't mastered all the basics that I want to. The things that I'm doing, they're not smooth. They're not 100% consistent. Sometimes when I do a kick turn or something else, it feels okay. But most of the time it feels wobbly and it feels, I would say, hairy. It feels like I'm going to fall. It looks awkward. It's not satisfying because it's not where I want it to be. But if I shift that and I say, hey, the person who wins is the person who has done this millions of times. This is coming back to inputs. Are my inputs actually an indication? Are they actually accurate to expect the kind of results that I want? Have I done a kick turn on my ramp millions of times? Because the people who do it well have. Have I done that yet? No. So it's unreasonable for me to feel frustrated that I can't, because I don't have the level of experience that is required for that to be reasonable for me to think that. I mean, in some ways it's like, well, there may be one person out there that can have done it as much as me and be better than me. But that doesn't matter, because the people who are really good, and a lot of people that have outworked their inherent disadvantage, should we say, have done it millions of times. So we're solving for the worst case in this example. So there's no reason I should feel frustrated, because I just need to get more reps in. And so I'm going to change my definition of success to just getting more reps in, because I'll get to the outcome if I get the reps. So what if instead of that, I just get on my ramp for 10 minutes? I can do that. I don't have to feel good about it. I don't have to land a trick. I don't have to feel like I'm making progress. I can win because I did something for 10 minutes. So I'm shifting from my definition of just being like, I hit the goal, micro goal, macro goal, doesn't matter, but I'm going to focus on the outcome. And this is exactly the same when it comes to weight loss. It comes to exercise. It comes to everything. What are the leading actions that I need to be successful? Is it eat a vegetable every day? Is it drink water instead of soda? You can win at that at your next meal. Like, you can win at that right now. You can win at that by going and cooking up a potato in the microwave. Is that an action that someone who has your goals wants to or does do? Then go do it. You've won. You might not be at your goal weight, but you're making the outcome or the inputs that you need to do to be successful, you're making them the goal in and of themselves. And then make those changes satisfying. Have some kind of way of tracking those and rewarding it so that that actually does genuinely feel like a win. You've got to reframe this in your mind, and then you can do little things that do this by, like I said, using an app, crossing it off, giving yourself a pat on the back, saying like, well done, reframing the way that you talk about this to yourself. There are many, many ways, and I've talked about them a lot on the podcast. Moving on. We're going to talk about when things feel too hard. When things feel hard, it means that we're in the mess of it. Why do things feel too hard? The unfortunate simple truth is that most things feel too hard because we are not used to being uncomfortable. We are not practiced at doing difficult things. And so in those moments when things get difficult, first of all, we need to remind ourselves that they will get, not that they will get easier, but that the outcomes are worth the difficulty. So we have to have a reason for carrying on. If the goal that you're trying to achieve is not actually worth the difficulty to you, I'm not talking about in the moment, but I'm talking about overall, then it's probably not the right goal to have. Like, what's getting you out of bed every day? You do not have to believe in every single second that you want it. This is not the way to solve for lack of motivation when you're faced with obstacles. But this is more in your absolute best moments. In your absolute best moments, when your motivation is high, when you think about that goal, is it worth the difficulty? Like, even just conceptually, is there some kind of goal that you're like, yeah, I want to achieve that? If there is, then you can work through things being difficult. So I have a few mantras that help me. And this is really just to remind myself that difficult things are okay, and that difficult things are necessary to growth. And one of the things is that I like to appeal to my own identity. So I'm going to be really honest. I have this idea that I really fear being mediocre. I want to be exceptional. I don't want to be like most people. I want to be better than most people. And it's not about me thinking that other people are worse. It's just about me feeling this sense of being a hero in my own story. And heroes, by definition, they go out and they struggle where their friends and family stay at home in comfort. So I have this complex, if you will, or I'm going to say an identity. It's a positive thing and it motivates me a lot. And I've talked about this in the podcast. I think this is incredibly important to cultivate. You are the hero of your own story. This comes back to not being a victim. You have the ability to be proactive. You have the ability to react the way you want to. And when you do that, you can achieve phenomenal things. So if you don't want to be like your neighbor, Bob, if you don't want to have the same outcome in life as your mum, if you've got habits right now that are leading you down a path where you don't like the outcomes, then you are going to have to change. So most likely, you're going to have to do something different. Well, not just most likely, you are going to have to be a very different person. So I like to appeal to this idea that I'm special, that I'm a winner, that I'm a hero, that I'm the 1% of people. And so a phrase that helps me, this comes from Alex as well, and is that this is where people quit. So in my hardest moments, I remind myself that this feeling is what makes most people quit. And so I feel much more motivated knowing that, because I'm like, well, I'm not most people. So the way that I prove that I'm not most people, that I'm not a side character, but I'm a hero, is I just don't quit. So I can reframe success in my mind to, it's not about it being easy, or even success. It's just about don't quit. And I also have this thing, is basically the same kind of thing, is if you don't quit, you win. Because it is so true. Like, if you just don't give up, if you just stay consistent, if you just work through the obstacles as they come up, if you just learn from your mistakes, if you just pick yourself up faster, if you just keep going one foot in front of the other, you will win. It doesn't have to be a firm foot. It doesn't have to be a stake in the ground. It can be a halting, weak, little tiny step. As long as you don't quit, like, that is the only obstacle, that is the only proviso, that is the only definition of success at this point in your worst moments when it feels too hard. If you don't quit, you win, because you will have other days where you can be a freaking beast and you can crush it. But you also have to be the kind of person that when you are at your lowest, you limp on forward. So we have to have a way to make it possible to carry on. So the hard has to be worth it at the finish line, because we are so hardwired to conserve energy. And the finish line, this is really important, the finish line always feels too far. But if we shorten that timeline, and if we have a goal that matters to us, we can do really, really difficult things in the short term. Our brains are really, really good at tricking us into doing short bursts of intensity when the goal is within sight. So oftentimes, when we're struggling and when we feel like we're in the thick of it, it's that our timeline feels really, really too long. And this is kind of like when you think about frustration, is we're not where we want to be. And then we think, well, I'm not where I want to be. It's going to take me 3 more months, or it's going to take me 6 more months, or maybe it's going to take me 2 more years. Or 10 years. And so we start to think, well, I don't know how I'm going to keep this level of effort. I don't know how I'm going to keep doing this. This feels hard now. How am I going to keep doing this for the next 10 years? And then we go, you know what? It's too hard. I'm going to quit. So what we've got to do is we've got to lengthen the timeline when it comes to expectations. Because then we're not frustrated, because then we're like, okay, this is reasonable. But we need to shorten the timeline when it comes to things being difficult. So we're thinking too far ahead, so we're invested in conserving energy because we don't want to do something that's going to require too much energy long term. So make your timeline much, 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 much smaller. Because we can sprint at the end of the marathon. That sprint, if you've ever done a half marathon or any kind of race, you will run full bore, helter-skelter, whatever. You will be racing. You will be sprinting when you see the finish line. Those last 100 meters, you do not leave anything in the tank. And you just go for it because you feel like up until that point, you're like, I don't know how I'm going to keep going. You feel worse at that moment than you've felt any other time in the race, but something shifts. And you're like, I can do this now because the end is in sight. I think about this in terms of giving birth. When you're in transition, it feels too hard because you know you still have all that pushing to go. You haven't even started pushing yet. And you're feeling like this is the worst thing yet. This is the worst pain I've ever experienced. I can't do this. I can't keep doing it. But when you get to those last couple of pushes, everything changes. Those become satisfying. They're so flippin' painful, but you get past that point of wanting to give up because you know that the end is in sight and that you're going to hold your baby very soon. We can struggle through our last rep. If you have ever been to the gym and you've ever done progressive overload where you're on your last rep, you're lifting up that weight and you're struggling, we can do those last reps. But if that was how it felt every single rep for 30 and every single set, we wouldn't do it. There's something about having that end in sight. It's like sitting through the last minutes of a tattoo and it has been so painful and you cannot wait to be done. When you know that you've only got those 10 minutes left, or you know you've only got a couple of minutes left, you can do it. You can do that. And so something I like to ask myself to kind of trick my brain, because this is what we're getting at. You're going to need to trick your brain to have smaller timelines and faster wins so that you can have those little micro milestones along the way so that you can keep moving forward. Because the moving forward and hitting that milestone, you can exert a lot of effort in doing that, and that feels really satisfying. So I often ask myself, can I do this for the next 5 minutes? I don't think about this in terms of, can I do this for the next 10 years? This has been a hugely helpful strategy when it comes to dealing with NICE diagnosis, because there are a lot of times we look at the trajectory of where this typically goes, and I think about what could happen over the next 10 years, and it's overwhelming. It feels completely hopeless because, I mean, A, we don't really know. It's not a good outcome normally, and I just can't even imagine our lives getting harder. And how that could affect, I can imagine it getting harder, and how that would affect our relationship and our family and all these other things. And there's sometimes where I'm like, I just feel like I'm having these panic attacks, and I'm like, I can't do this. This is too hard. And I have to say, Charles, yeah, this is hard. Can you do this for the next 5 minutes? Can you survive for the next 5 minutes? Not in your lifetime, just for the next 5 minutes. I'm like, yeah. Sometimes it's one. Like sometimes it has to be that small. Can I survive for the next 1 minute? Okay, just do that. That is your goal. Can I do one more rep? Not 10 more. Can I do one? Okay, I can do one more rep. Or can I just start a rep? Can I, when I do this with hip thrust because that's my most difficult exercise. I'm going to go do them tonight. Oh, kill me now. But I have to play this game with myself, and that when I do, after I do my first set, so I do a set of 10, and when I'm going into my second one, my brain just goes, you've got 20 more of these. It was already painful, that first set. Now you're going to do 10, and then you're going to do another 10, and that last 10 is torture for me. And the last few of all of them, like, I feel like I'm dying. Like, to the point where, like, I will finish a set, and I'm like, I feel like I want to cry. Because I'm like, I just feel defeated oftentimes. And so I have to trick myself, because otherwise I would literally leave the gym. So I say to myself, I give myself a different definition of the finish line, because the other one's too far away. So I say, Charles, can you start? Can you start this? And so I tell myself, you don't have to finish it. You just need to start it. So I'll start my second set. And then I'll get to, let's say I get to 7. I can normally do up to 7, and then it starts to feel really bad, really fast. And then I tell myself, can you do 2 more? Yep, can you do 2 more? Okay, can you do 1 more? I do that 1 more. Can you do 1 more? And I can normally do that 1 more. And then on that last one, it's the same kind of thing. And so when you're thinking about this in terms of diet, you've got to be thinking, how can I just do this for a little bit longer? How can I shorten that timeline? It feels really, really difficult. Could I do this for 1 more day? I don't have to do this diet ever again. Could I eat vegetables for 1 more meal? Could I not have the chips for 1 night? I can eat them tomorrow. I will eat them tomorrow, but could I just do it for 1 more night? If that feels too long, could I just not eat them for 10 minutes? Can I delay that feeling for 10 minutes? You've shortened the timeline. You've changed the definition of the finish line. And then you go, well, you know what? At the end of 10 minutes, I can eat them. That's fine. I've changed that. And all you're really trying to do here is to teach yourself that you're able to hold that level of difficulty and to continue on with it a little bit longer than what you have in the past. Because most people are so impulse driven that once they feel themselves in a situation that feels messy and difficult and hard, and because they're hardwired to conserve energy like we all are, they give up instantly in that moment. But if they could just hold that for a little bit longer, they would teach themselves what they are capable of, that because we are all capable of doing hard things. And you think about that hero's journey, they start small. They have a small little goal. They have these little micro missions in the beginning, and they all lead up to this big, big battle at the end. And they call this death and rebirth because the character has to get to a point where they are willing to die for the cause, and they will either die or they will succeed. So they will die trying or they will succeed. There is so much character growth that needs to happen, and it happens through them learning along the way that they can achieve these little tiny things, these little micro milestones along their journey. And so we're exactly the same. I often think about Spudfit Andrew Taylor, who I think he lost like 120 pounds or something. He ate mostly potatoes to do it. And his story is absolutely phenomenal because he didn't really have like a lot of willpower in the beginning, but he managed to eat potatoes for a very long period of time and has now seen huge success. And one of the things that he said when we did a podcast episode together was he would always have this container of cooked up potatoes, and he would drive to the McDonald's car park and he would tell himself, you can go get McDonald's, that's fine, you just need to eat these potatoes first. So what did he do? He just shortened the finish line. He wanted a certain outcome. He wanted to give in to the difficult thing, but he just told himself, well, I just need to do this little thing, which is eat potatoes, and then I'll give in to it. The thing was, once he ate that big container of potatoes, he no longer wanted McDonald's, and he drove out of the car park and he continued to do that. But then over time, you stop driving to the car park and you just eat the potatoes. You've built that level of trust in yourself. So we've got to think about, how do we shorten that timeline? How do we give ourselves those micro wins? How do we trick ourselves? And the people who are most successful are the best at playing this game. They play it in so many ways. I saw this reel the other day where it was talked about, it was like runner's math. And so runner's math is, I'm at mile 8, which means that I'm only 2 miles from mile 10, which means that I'm nearly done because I'm only 3 miles from the finish line, which means that, or I'm only 2 miles from like being 1 mile out and then I'm done. And I'm like, yeah, like that's exactly how you run. Like that's exactly how you break it down. Because when you're in the middle of a half marathon and you think about all the time that you have to go, it's too hard, it's too far away. But when you break it down, you go, you know, I just got to get to mile 10, or I just got to get to kilometer 10, I just got to get to this part here, I just got to get to this little section. You can do it because you do it all the time. You struggle through the last little bit. We just need to be able to trick our brains to do that more consistently with the things that we're trying to achieve. So make the barrier to continuing smaller, by making the timeline smaller, and then realizing that 100% is not 100% every day. And so some days just showing up in a small capacity is going to be what bridges that gap from who you are today to who you want to be. So you've got to make it as easy as it needs to be so that you do not give up. Because all we're really trying to teach ourselves here is that we're capable of doing hard things, and that when we don't give up, we win, which is the truth. So no matter how small we need to make something, you win if you don't give up. And this has been hugely transformative to our clients inside of Lean of Plants. And we have something which we call the next best mindset, which is, if you can't do the absolute best thing, what is something that is a little bit worse that is the next best thing that you could conceivably do? If you cannot eat potatoes and broccoli, could you eat potatoes and broccoli with a little bit of a side of pizza? If you're going to eat the pizza, could you eat it with potatoes and broccoli? What is the next best thing you could do? And so really the only kind of provisos to this is to do the absolute best you can, give the best that you can, but that's going to look different on different times. And you're just really not giving up. You're not throwing in the towel. You're not giving into that impulse. You're really just allowing yourself to do something slightly difficult for you, and then to call that a win, because it is a win, because it's change. It's progress. It might not be perfect, but it's moving you along the timeline, which is all you really want to see. And this could look like just going to the gym. If you can't actually go and you're like, you know what, I'm not going to go to the gym today, just go and then leave. Go to the parking lot and then leave. If you're not going to have a good day with your diet, have some broccoli with your donuts. Order a salad with your burger. Do things that are somewhat of a stretch for you, even if they're not perfect. Build that mental muscle of being able to do hard things, even if they are only slightly harder than giving up. So here's some questions to ask yourself when you think about this, is in terms of figuring out why the heck am I feeling the way that I am? What's causing me to feel like I want to give up? Everything feels difficult. The first one, am I feeling hopeless, anxious, frustrated, or it's too hard? That's going to help you know what kind of strategy to implement. Do I have options? And if not, go and get some. Do I have a plan? Sift out the options and choose the one that makes the most sense with the information you have. Remember, any action and execute with speed and violence is better than not making a decision. Indecision is the worst decision. How much time does the plan need to see results? Okay, stick to it for that long. Have I stuck to the plan long enough? And have I really done the things that are required to see the results that I'm expecting? Is the results that I want worth the pain of going through the plan? Do I want to be 100 pounds lighter? Do I want to reduce my cholesterol? Do I want to shave 10 years off my life? Do I want to have a habit of building muscle so that I can play with my kids long term? Yeah, I do want to have that. Is it going to be hard? Yeah, but it's totally worth it because that's an amazing outcome. Okay, how am I going to actually sort that out so that I can actually do it? That I've got to figure out what the plan is because it's worth it. And then how can I make the doing more satisfying and give myself more wins so I can actually continue on? This is how I manage things being difficult. So once you've answered these kind of questions, it helps you to kind of go down these list of options and start to create strategies around it. And it is amazing what we can achieve when we feel positive about our progress, when we embrace the difficult things, but we are able to do difficult things, when we start to see and trust that we can do difficult things, when we go from frustrated to looking at things with reality, without rose-tinted glasses, when we stop shooting on ourselves, we actually take responsibility for where we're at right now, when we make decisions with boldness, with speed, and with the ability to change our minds later on and to not beat ourselves up making a wrong decision, when we get curious and we get guidance and we brainstorm options and we realize that there is always some kind of option to respond, when we have all of these elements, we can do phenomenal things. We can face hardships day in, day out, and we are going to become the kind of person, the hero of our stories, the person that we want to be, because we have these things in our toolkit. So pick one. Pick something small, just get started. You can do it. No matter how hard things are, you can keep going. You have the ability to do that. I'm so proud of you for being here listening to this podcast. I hope that you've found this helpful, useful, valuable. And if you have, then please consider leaving a review. It really, really, really helps to get the podcast out to more people. They come through on my email, so I read every single one, and it makes this feel worth it for me. I cannot tell you how valuable it is when I see that this is changing someone's life, and I am not just speaking into a microphone, standing in my office with my cold coffee, feeling like a total weirdo and like I've spoken for too long. So yeah, go give it a review, and if you are wanting help on your journey, if you are not seeing the results that you deserve, if you are not getting closer to the goal that you have, and you want help with that, you want a proven way of achieving that, and you want to work with our team to do that, then I want to invite you to join the hundreds of women inside of our program who have done just that, changed their lives, become the hero of their stories, lost the weight, continue to do so, got their cholesterol down, finished their binge restrict cycles, gotten out of all or nothing thinking, found food freedom, and are really just absolutely making huge progress in their lives. If that is something that you want, then I want to encourage you to hop on a call with our team and see if the program is a good fit for you. You can find the information in the description. All right, that is it for me, and I will see you in next week for another episode. Bye.